Triple M's.
Oh! That has gone sideways!
My word!
That has gone sideways!
Oh. Cricket Fan Podcast.
The Aussies treated cricket as more of a performance arts piece on day one of the Oval Test, but still managed to finish the day almost ahead thanks to the efforts of, don't laugh, Mitch Marsh. The Triple M Cricket Fan Podcast is here to take you through all of it. I'm your host, Rudy Etzel, joined by Tommy Beers.
G'day, Rudy. Thanks for having me.
George Porter.
G'day, Rudes. Thank you.
And our resident pom, Matt Bellotti.
Hello there.
So just how happy were you, Bellots, when Tim Payne won the toss and then elected to bowl?
Yeah, it's weird. The only way England could win this test, and we talked about it in the preview and said it's extremely unlikely, and it still is really unlikely, but the only way England were going to win this test is batting first and hoping that the pitch deteriorates and hoping that over the course of the test that they're able to set a challenging enough target for Australia batting last. So it was a really strange decision of Tim Payne, albeit a very charitable one. I think the theme of the day is
we're just giving them a chance.
Yeah,
that's all. It was charity just on making both, a game both of sides. It. You know, we got out stupidly. You kept dropping catches. It was the most benevolent day's cricket I've ever seen.
No one wanted to win.
No, the Aussies fielded like they were still celebrating, still on the source. They dropped so many. Like the Peter Siddle one was easy. Unforgivably
yep.
bad.
Yeah.
Really, for a bloke that's, you know, come into the side and who's really value to the side is the fact that he gives 100% at all times and doesn't stuff up.
Tim Payne will be very disappointed as well.
Yes, yeah.
That was gettable.
Or yeah, you're our resident keeper, Beersy. What's he done wrong there?
Well, he no doubt the ball was absolutely flying to him. Like, it was humming, but he didn't get, like, he kind of got lazy and didn't get near the ball. He kind of just threw a hand out to it instead of moving his feet. He was there, you know.
I think Warner could have.
Yeah, that is 100% the keeper's catch. You can't leave that one. It's right there. He made the ground. His arm was right there. He just needed to get two hands to it, and he just got a bit lazy and thought, "Oh, I'll just snatch at it," and it went down. But he'll be extremely disappointed with that, and that's one he should have absolutely swallowed,
gobbled up.
Yeah,
that's right. And after winning in toss and bowling, you can't really afford to give those up. They were 1 for 80 at lunch, England.
Steve
and then
Smith's catch also was 50-50.
I think that was tough.
It was tough.
I think 50-50 is probably a bit harsh on Smithy.
By Smith's standards, he should
probably take
it. I think it's notable, though. They did talk about this a little bit on the comms, that the Oval as a ground, and it because it happens so often, there might well be something, the fact that it's a hard ground to pick the ball up in. And all of those catches you're talking about were at the same sort of height. And then later in the day, there was a fantastic pull shot from Butler that Labuschagne just did not see. And yeah, okay, the sun was in his eyes, but it's really hard to pick the ball
up.
And if you look at the height there, it's about chest, head height. Mm. And repeatedly throughout the day, players were not seeing that ball as clear as they might have done.
Yeah, that's true. And one for 100, 2 for 120.
It's looking
really
grim.
Like England's day, didn't it? It looked like they were just going to motor away. Joe Root looked a certainty for a ton that he ever looks Joe Root, to be fair. And then Mitch Marsh came on, and all of a sudden, it just looked like Terry Alderman out there.
The saviour.
Just like moving bending the ball around corners, really.
We've never doubted Mitch. You know, we've always been on Team Mitch here at Triple M Cricket.
Yeah, make sure you never listen to any of your podcasts.
Yeah. We were calling for him in the team first test.
Actually, I put it to you, it was a little bit before that. You're right to say, at 3 for 170 there, and Root looked pretty decent, apart from that bizarre sort of 15 minutes on the side of the break where he was dropped three times, all three of which should have probably possibly been taken, that actually the key moment was the unbelievable delivery that Cummins pulled out to Root.
Again.
And as soon as Root's gone, then that allowed Marsh to come in and allowed him to bowl that kind of delivery. The cloud came in, and as soon as the cloud came out, they always say, win the toss, and you don't. If you're choosing whether you bat or bowl in England, you don't look down at the pitch. Australia, it seems like, spent so long looking down, they should have been looking up. And it was when that cloud came in, it moved around, and well played, Marsh, because you were phenomenal.
Can we just appreciate Pat Cummins for a second? Because he's produced that delivery about four times throughout this Ashes, and that is an unplayable...
Twice to Joe Root.
That will get absolutely anyone out on their day. Like, it doesn't matter how well you... They'll get Steve Smith out. That's how well that is.
He's seen three catches go down off his bowling. He goes, all right, do you know what,
lunch,
leave it up to me. I'll bloody do it. If you can't do it, I'll just bowl him again.
I was saying at lunch that he probably was well within his rights to really sort of throw some hands at
lunch. Yeah. Do you know what? Actually, I hope at lunch they went in and said, "Boys, what are we up to?" Like, you know, when you go to the footy and you're watching your team and you go, "They don't look on here." And that's what the first session looked like. The drop catches, they were misfielding a few.
Yeah, you can't afford like,
they
to do that.
They didn't really bowl that well, and you know.
But when you win the toss and bowl, you can't.
You have to.
Yeah,
like,
you can't.
Surely
you can't. That can't be an excuse because it would have been in the team meeting that all right, if we win the toss, we're going to bowl today.
Yeah,
and they would. They can't. You know that mental lapse just can't be there.
I wonder if they had a couple of those wild boar 15%.
I know. It was only on Sunday night. Remember that the Aussies bowled all day.
Yeah, I don't understand the decision to bowl first.
The bowlers would have been ropeable.
Well, more than that, they bowled all day Friday. They bowled all day Friday. They bowled the first session on Saturday. They bowled all day Sunday. And now they've had to bowl all day Thursday as well. It's the work that particularly Hazelwood and Cummins have done. Mm. And they're still bowling brilliantly. They should be tired. They should not be able to bowl how they're bowling at this moment. It's amazing. And just to run back on that key moment, and at the risk of going full Shane Warne and John Buchanan and talking about three maidens in a row, that's exactly what happened. The key moment yesterday came immediately after tea. England were 169 for three in the real way you tell the scores. And they then bowled maiden and another maiden and another maiden and then an over with just a buy in it, and that was all.
Yep.
And then Cummins produced that absolute beauty, and suddenly England were in massive amounts of trouble from there. And it's really a great... They obviously had key words at tea there, that Australian side, and said, look, we could allow this test to get away from us, and we don't want to do that. So it's a really impressive final session from the Aussies.
Yeah, they don't. They pretty much have barely put together two poor sessions. The Aussies, and they really imposed their will effectively through Mitch Marsh, which is just really didn't think I'd be
laughable
saying that today.
What do you see his comments as well? It's talking about how Australians hate.
He said, most of Australia hates me. I think it was a bit tongue in cheek
But he also he went on to say that it's probably warranted because he's been given more opportunity. He admitted that he got more opportunity than he probably deserved, and that I understand why people are getting frustrated because basically I'm not doing what I'm in the team to do.
Like, also, part of that chat was a discussion about how he'd lost a very good friend like last year as well. Mm. So he's talking about having tough times and coming out the other side. On the other side of the coin, Nathan Lyon, he bowled four overs yesterday.
Yeah.
What's going on there? Is he still troubled by the spinning finger? What's he playing for if he is?
Well, we don't have another spinner in the squad.
Yeah, but we do have an abundance of very good quicks.
Yes, but
and it's not like they need him to get through the overs because they've fallen eight overs short of the run of the over rate anyway.
Yeah, I'm not sure what the answer is because I just think they were trying to. I don't think they were banking on Marsh bowling so well. Like if he, I think they were probably looking at him to kind of just, roll through a couple through the middle of the day, maybe finish with anywhere between 6 to 10 overs for the day. What did he finish bowling?
He bowled 16.
I think if you take 10 overs off him, those would be the 10 that would usually go to Lyon. But he was in a groove, so they just kept rolling with him. And
I imagine a callus on your spinning figure can't be.
Yeah, it can't be comfortable.
And he wouldn't have bowled a ball since the last test match. And I reckon as soon as he gets back out in the field and he just feels the ball in that position in his fingers again, he goes, geez, this hasn't even recovered. So I imagine it can't
just
be that
another
tough,
weird reason why we bowled, though. Like, give him a day. Give him another day and a half, maybe, just to bat on this.
If Australia had batted, Steve Smith would be 140 not out at stumps.
Yeah. Absolutely. Like, it's a strange call. For Lyon, when it was about whatever the 78th over or something, and you needed an over of spin, and I think if there'd been a bowler that was successful, that was bowling spin, he would probably have had that over. It was quite a big call to bring on Marnus at that point, and it seemed to be, it's because Jack Leach is batting, and you're like, why on earth are you bowling for Jack Leach's
benefit?
We've got
no answers to get
again,
Leach out.
You've got us eight down for crying out loud. Yeah. It was a really sad state of affairs, and Lyon, unfortunately, he's got the worst average bowler of all bowlers to have taken a wicket in the series, bar Ben Stokes, who's not only the fifth choice England bowler, but is injured as well. So it's not great times for Nath.
Oh, he's coming again at Nathan Lyon.
Yeah. Well, I've been saying it from the start.
We'll get him in here to plead his case, and he'll just hold the Ashes trophy.
If you're bowling Marnus ahead of him, is Lyon your second spinner? Can you be both a second spinner and a goat? Certainly not.
He's the first spinner. England really could have put the foot in the throat here and just sort of didn't, really. But it's not that bad because of Joss Butler's 64. I tell you what, is
After
there a man
said,
alive?
Don't be in the team, he comes
is there a man in the England side here who just is better at responding to really having his front to the wall and like seeing it all in front of him, the track's flat, you know, the sun's out. Is there a better, like, is there someone that you want in your side more than if you're really, if the pressure's really off? Boy, Joss Butler stands up, doesn't he?
That's a real one-day situation, though.
The excuse for him to bat with the tail and go, oh, well, now I can't bat like a batsman anymore. I just need to come out and swing. It's just, that's perfect.
Yeah, and there's no better foil for that than Jack Leach as well.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It's like, oh, well, we're eight down. I need to swing now. I need to go. And that's just, that plays into his hands, doesn't it? Like, that's his strength.
Again, that really tired attack as well. Yeah. I think if it was earlier in the day, and you might well find after a good night's sleep that the Australian bowlers, Cummins and Hazlewood particularly, will fancy ripping into them this morning, and it'll be a very different set.
Yeah, well, I think what will either happen here is that Butler will go on and make a slap and giggle sort of 140-odd,
like
or
Stokes.
He'll be out really, really early.
Yeah,
yeah. I think
I think the smart money's possibly on option two there.
Yeah, well, I tend to think so as well, but it's at the moment...
Depends if we hold
England
our chances
are not,
as
England
well.
Aren't behind the game at all. Nah. Like, really, England have a chance to... Like, they make three...
No one's
put in, another 60 for the last two wickets.
I don't think anyone's in front or behind this game at the moment.
It's yeah, I know. But England have been like really behind the game for pretty much the whole series.
Yeah,
except
agreed.
For a couple of sessions at Lord's and then about 20 minutes at Headingley. Yeah. And this is probably the first time where they really can just, you know, motor away if need be.
It's not on the rundown. And sorry for going off paper, but what did we think about Siddle playing this match? Because I feel like Starkey could have come in and just wiped the tail. Someone's got to do it. He would have done it.
That's his value. It
was fresh too.
I was very surprised.
He's played one test.
I was very surprised to see, if you're going to pick the fifth bowler in Mitch Marsh, as an all-rounder, you don't need Siddle as well. Like Siddle's your workhorse. And if you've got five frontline kind of options, I don't think you need to play the extra
the
bowler
one,
Peter Siddle to do the heavy lifting. Like,
you
can play that. You can roll the dice on a Mitchell Starc or a James Pattinson, who were both, I assume, they're both fully fit. Like, I haven't heard anything that they're
anything to the contrary.
As, as fit as they get.
Exactly. And they're so much more dangerous. And obviously, Siddle's got his value just kind of building pressure.
He didn't do that.
He didn't do that. And you've just got these world-class bowlers just sitting, running drinks. Like, it's a bizarre
And then also to bowl first. None of it makes much sense to me.
Yeah.
Really.
I said it the other week again. It's just the luxury of having too many good bowlers to pick from. This is the first time we've ever had this issue.
Is it maybe a little bit of a farewell for P-City?
Potentially.
Well, maybe. Yeah.
I think you just banked on the fact that your most consistent and reliable bowler was going to be able to hit the right mark, and he found it really hard. We looked at the pitch; it was much bouncier than we've seen so far, so he needed to pitch it up. And he, for the guy that's the most experienced, especially the most experienced at the Oval as well,
exactly,
none of your other attack have played at the Oval and bowled as much as he has, and he got it wrong. He just put it in entirely the wrong spot, and I think that's going to be a good lesson for the England bowlers. You looked at the guys who hit the right length, and they were very challenging. No more than Mitch Marsh, which is why I guess England will look today and say the two bowlers that hit the right length and swing it around, nibble it a little bit, are Curran and Wokes. They're the guys that England are looking at. But for Australia, it was the guys that did pitch it up that little bit fuller and hit that famous... And actually, while I'm thinking about it, there's 6.5 metres. I don't know if it's well worth, just as a piece, if you're a big fan. So if you haven't seen David Lloyd talking about pitching 6.5 metres away from the stumps, it's the most captivating thing. And go onto YouTube, check it out, because our meme artist, Ethan Meldrum himself, has done an hour long just on loop of David Lloyd.
Did he?
Six and a half metres. That's an hour. It's wonderful. It's the best piece of content you'll ever see.
If you get through the full hour, I think I lasted
about 17 seconds before my brain
like one of those ASMR videos, isn't it? Yeah. You're listening to go to sleep or something.
It was bouncing quite high, though. I mean, we saw
it was. Moraes missed.
Moraes, yeah.
Our man. Really high.
It
because
was
his deck's
high.
Flat. Thought, because they should have batted first.
I know. The finger went up and kind of the Aussies appealed, and then it was a bit of a long pause, and then the finger went up and it was kind of like, all right.
Burns didn't even hesitate. Hit him on the thigh pad, basically. I was well above the pad.
I did enjoy, on the other side of the coin, Johnny Bairstow reviewing. What's he doing? Hopeless. He's gone down to... who was he batting with at the time? It must have been Butler. And he said to him, what do you reckon? should I review? And Butler said, no. And then he's reviewed. What do you mean?
That sums up.
Super duper out.
Like, Johnny Bairstow getting set up by Mitchell Marsh is just peak Johnny Bairstow.
It's the story of the summer, isn't it?
Let's just bowl. I think it was what, two overs straight of just outswing it. So let's just bowl, let's just be patient for then, two overs, and then literally and then one in-swinger, and he had no answers for it. Yeah. He was nowhere near it, and it was crashing.
Do you reckon?
Turns out, like, when you pick a bunch of middle order one day batsmen, they play like middle order one day batsmen.
Yeah, and there he was laughing in the change rooms afterwards in a very Dave Warner esque sort of fashion, going, "Mate, you've really stuffed this up."
Yeah. You really, I do. To credit England a bit, though, to be fair, they have. Since they got rolled for 67 at Headingley, they pretty much have put away a lot of those really attacking instincts.
Yes.
I've noticed.
Yeah, that's very true. And certainly we're scoring.
Particularly Ben Stokes, aside from the several sixes he hit at the end of Headingley. But you know what I mean?
And then played a silly shot. And I mean, to go back to the point of yesterday, you look at the 8 wickets to 4, how many of them were to ill-advised shots or being... And all right, there were a couple of fantastic deliveries, and I guess you would credit Mitch Marsh in that case for outsmarting Johnny Bairstow, but it's still not very impressive cricket from a guy that's played a lot of cricket and should know better than that. There were some really crap decisions.
But I don't think they've looked as febrile as they did.
Absolutely right. In the context, you know, we'll take 270 in the context of how awful the decisions were in the first two tests. Yeah.
Yes, that's true. I think, are we nearly done here? I think it's almost time up. What do you reckon will happen tonight, guys? What do you see happening, Busy?
The Smith Show just rolls on for another day and just let him make a squillion runs and kill the game, basically.
Are we getting a big Butler cameo?
I suspect not, really. I think we've probably got nearly enough, and I think we'll be looking at Australia now are going to be purely focused on getting a target of less than 150 to chase on the last day.
Yep.
So how are they going to do that? Well, in an ideal world, you're
just going to bat for 2 days.
You only bat once.
Mm. Yeah, I think that's quite plausible. I reckon that was probably the plan from the start.
Yep. I'm going to absolutely hate it if we can't bowl the tail out again and Jack Leach just hangs around and then somehow it's they just, get another 50 or whatever runs. That'll be the worst result because we haven't bowled the tail out cheaply.
We drop Mitchell Stark after one game. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, well, I think that's enough from us here. I kind of think we might see a little
happy
bit of
happy birthday to Warnie too.
Oh, yeah. Happy 50th Warnie.
The great man.
Yeah. Always good content, Warnie. That's enough for us today. We'll be back tomorrow with a wrap-up of day 2 and hopefully another season's done.